G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out. Good morning, Whitey.
What a significant morning it is. A significant morning.
Why is that, Adam?
Well, firstly, it's Black Friday. So that's very exciting.
I need to talk about that.
Yeah, very, very exciting. And we're both in the studio together.
For the first time.
And it's weird.
It is weird. I'm not comfortable looking at
no,
you.
I'm not either.
Not that you're looking at, unattractive or anything. Just I'm not comfortable.
A few kilos extra.
Oh, probably in the same boat. Don't worry about it.
But it is weird. Like, what are we meant to do? look at each other.
Well, I think you have to do that. We don't have to. You can look at the screen because we're
Yeah, I'll look at you on the screen.
We're both on the screen as well because we've got our guest zooming in this morning.
He's lazy.
Well, he's got some things going on, so I'm prepared to cut him some slack on this occasion. Right. We'll find out more about that.
But I think it's been, well, I don't know the exact date, but I reckon it was the first couple of days of July. So that's over 6 months ago. No, 5 months ago.
It's close enough.
No, that's actually incorrect. It's about four and a bit months ago.
It's close enough to five. Just run with five. Five sounds sexier.
That's weird. It's a long time.
I actually forgot how to get here. I must admit, I forgot how to get here this morning. I took the wrong turn. I actually forgot how to get here. Lucky I had my buddy, my car park pass, because I didn't know where that was.
No.
I was just foraging around through the glove box, and I found it, which was a great result. Otherwise, I would have been locked out parking on the street, getting a fine as normal. So I would have been back to normal very quick. But it's nice to be back in the studio. Great to see Craig pressing all the buttons, and little Joey at the back doing great things, and even the great John J. Bowden, who makes the most magnificent strong black coffee in the morning. He needs 15 of them because he's here at 2 o'clock. He needs 15, but he makes a magnificent coffee, does Johnny J. Bowden, and he's done it for me today, so it was nice to get back in the coffee train with Johnny J. So that's been good. We're happy to be back in the service here in the RSN Towers studios, and we would love to have the company of Adam Romanaskis, the Bombers champion, these days manager to the Stars, but he's got other things to do today. Ramo, good morning.
More important things, evidently.
Yes, very good morning. It is quite odd seeing you two in that studio. We when you had your week off, both Scotty and Maze were in the studio and just test driving things for you two again. But no, we're sneaking away for the weekend, our first trip away since I suppose we've been able to. So as soon as the show finishes, the car's already packed and we're ready to go.
Ring of Steel down and Rammer's just off.
Yep, that's the plan.
You going up to that boat of yours? Is that where you're going?
No, we're not. No, we're not actually. A lot of old friends that we grew up with, we usually have a weekend together, and it's been pushed back and pushed back, and we've waited and waited. So this weekend's the weekend, and off we go.
Where are you going?
Chuka.
Mm-hmm. You're not houseboating on the Chuka. You're not cheating on the houseboat, are you?
No. Staying at the caravan park, so really looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun.
That sounds like a nice thing to do. What's the weather going to be like this weekend? It's going to be hot today.
Hot. That's yes.
No millage, Whitey? No millage?
No, millage.
So you're going to drive 3 hours to go and live outside for the weekend?
Well, the Chuka today, 39.
39?
And then Saturday, 42.
And you're going to be in a caravan?
No, we're not staying in a caravan. We got the cabin with the air conditioner. We're staying in the caravan park, but in the cabins, Whitey. So you got to pre-plan these things and look at the situation. The weather situation is always vital, and the air conditioner was a must.
What about a motel?
Yeah, I've done that up in Echuca a few times. I like the motels.
There's nothing wrong with camping. Camping's a great thing, Whitey. You've got to learn to embrace that.
No, I don't.
No. That's not for Whitey Huff. Let's be honest. Camping and Adam White should not be even said in the same sentence. It will not work.
I can see him getting up in the middle of the night with his thongs on, going to the toilet block. Ramo, couldn't you see that?
Isn't it called? It's called a Blueston block or whatever it's called.
We just call it the toilet block.
No, thank you.
I reckon I could see you wandering in your dressing gown up to the toilet block at 3 a.m. yeah, with one of the kids who's had an accident. Be fantastic.
Oh, God.
Well, good luck to you, Rammer, I say. Although that's too hot for me. I need some air conditioning for that.
Well, it's a little bit of a concern, but I sort of had a look at the facilities, and the kids will have a ball there. They've got all sorts of activities for the kids at the park there, so looking forward to it.
Sounds good. Now, well, you won't be doing too much shopping, but I reckon our man might be, Rammer, because it is Black Friday. Black Friday for our man. What do you got on the list, Whitey? It's Christmas time. What do you got on the list for Black Friday sales?
No, I haven't planned anything, but I will be having a look because you've got sort of two licks of the ice cream now. You've got the Australian Black Friday, which is quite new, and then the American version, which is tomorrow.
Of course, and then don't forget Cyber Monday.
And Cyber Monday, exactly
so
right.
You've got a whole, you've got 4 day extravaganza for That's shopping.
Right. So, but I've got a rule in the house. We've got a rule. I've got a rule. We've got a rule. I'm not allowed to buy any clothes. So that sort of means it's a little bit difficult.
Why is that rule there?
Well, for two reasons. I think I've told this story before that I buy clothes on the internet, and they don't fit ever. So they just sit.
So after all these times you've bought clothes on the internet, you haven't adjusted the sizings, you haven't adjusted what you need?
And Emma has told me I'm not allowed to buy any clothes until I lose weight.
Emma's told you that?
Yes.
I don't know.
Okay. So, and I haven't lost weight.
Is that why that Fitzroy jumper still gets a whirl?
Yeah, well, that's as big as a tent. So,
hang on, didn't you find all your clothes in your cricket bag?
Yeah, I did. I found a heap. T-shirts, shorts, thongs.
What do you need to shop for then? You don't need to shop anymore.
But when stuff's cheap, you want to buy it, don't you?
Well, I went up to DFO at Essendon Fields during the week, and the sales had already started, obviously, there. There were people everywhere, and very, very cheap at DFO in Essendon. So this is not an advertising plug, but...
It seems to be.
It seems to be, I know. But I was literally in and out half in an hour. Knew the exact shops I needed to go to. Bang, 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 done.
No, that is the key to shopping. The key to shopping is not to actually shop. It's to go and buy and then get out. That's different. It. Shopping is different to buying and getting out.
Yep.
I've got no interest in walking around for 3 hours and not really knowing what I want and then walking away with nothing or a half a dozen socks. Like it's.
And so many people enjoy that experience.
I know. I don't quite get that. I don't quite get that. When has, off the SMS, when has Black Friday, since when has Black Friday been a thing?
Oh, no, it has been a recent thing because what was happening was that it's big in America, as I said, and people were purchasing things from American companies and Australian companies were missing out or Australian shops were missing out, so they had to get in on the action because Black Friday is what happens the day after Thanksgiving in America.
Right.
And so it's like the Boxing Day sales here in Australia. So that's how it started, and everyone started buying things online. So... Australia got involved in it. That's what it is.
Right. So it's Boxing Day. Okay. That makes sense.
It's the Boxing Day sales type thing. And I think now it doesn't feel... We've got to move on, don't we? We're not talking sport, but it's one of those things that a month out from Christmas, people can go and get their Christmas presents and get them cheaper. It's not a bad situation.
I would love you to buy a couple of more polos. Whitey, that collar is nicely popped like Mark Wall.
It's a good one, this one. Yeah. This is a rod and gun number.
Very expensive.
I bought 8 of them.
Same colour.
Back in March. Just an array of colours. I needed some colours. They were cheap. Massive sales sometimes at Rod and Gun. But this is a chance. I chucked out all the old ones and put the new ones in.
There's a question off the SMS, which I think is a very important one from the baker, who's a thinking man's baker he is. He doesn't just sit there and knead the dough, man. He thinks about life. He goes, how would Emma go if your rule was reversed?
In what way?
Well, you're not allowed to buy clothes until you lose weight. If that rule was reversed and she wasn't allowed to buy anything until she lost weight, how would that go?
Well, she doesn't have that issue.
Well, but I'm just saying if it was an issue. The baker's just thinking. He's just thinking.
Yeah. I'd probably be in a bit of trouble.
the decent question from the baker this morning. He's up and about early doors, which makes perfect sense.
Mm.
Perfect sense. Hey, Ramo, I want to go straight to you. There's a topic we touched on yesterday, but we didn't get back to. And it's probably best that you're here to help us get through it anyway, in fairness. This whole rookie list situation. Yep. Now, Eddie Betts is 733 years old, mm-hmm. and he's on the rookie list. Mm-hmm. What's going on?
It doesn't make a lot of sense, that does it?
They're making an absolute mockery of the rookie list. Why wouldn't they instead... Now, I know we're in extraordinary circumstances and the lists have been adjusted and all that sort of stuff and there's an element of compromise to all this. I understand that and I'm prepared to wear that. But why wouldn't they just have introduced with all these other changes Put a veteran spot back on the list. Just have one veteran spot so you can put a guy like Grant Birchall or Eddie Betts or whoever else it applies to on a veterans list. Why would you put him on a rookie list? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, you're spot on, Harper. The veterans list was something that clubs utilised really, really well. There's a portion of the player's salary that sits outside the salary cap, so to give that relief that they need. So in this case, because of the list size changes, clubs need to get to a certain number so they can have a certain amount of picks at the draft. Now, being able to manoeuvre players onto the rookie list has been really important. As we saw on Wednesday, Wednesday, that 11 clubs, as soon as they understood that rule, they went bang. So Tuesday night, I think the rule came in Tuesday night at 6 o'clock. The clubs got information from the AFL, and the phone just started ringing. Like, I had a couple of players that were moved from the primary list to the rookie list straight away. But the other part is and this is where I think clubs will get themselves in trouble. A guy like Eddie Betts or Grant Birchall and the like, you're right, they shouldn't be able to do it like that. It should go to, whether it's called an additional list or a veteran, the old supplementary list, whatever that is. A rookie should be a player that hasn't played, been in the state leagues, or has only played a couple of games of football. That's the true definition of a rookie. Now, to have those guys that we see now that have been transferred on the list doesn't make a lot of sense. Now, clubs have been pushing for many, many years for just to have one list. Don't worry about rookie lists, sup lists, veterans lists. Just one list. Here's how many players that you're allowed to have. Here's your salary cap. You work it whatever way you want. But the minimum number you got to have is 38, and the maximum number that you can have is 44. You work your list the way you want it. Now, a rookie list player is no different to a primary list player. They can play at any time. They get paid whatever they get paid, but a portion of their salary sits outside the salary cap and gives the club some sort of relief.
So could Collingwood put Jordan Degoe on the rookie list?
Yep.
And as a way of saving money?
So this will be most likely a one-off year where clubs are able to do it. They've never been able to do this before, where they've been able to transfer a player from a primary list to a rookie list without the player going back through the draft. So what's happened, so Eddie Betts at the moment, okay, he's classified right now as a delisted free agent. So it gives clubs a chance over the next 2 or 3 days to go to Eddie. Here's a 2-year deal. Here's a 3-year deal. Come to our football club. We can sign you without you having to go through any form of draft situation. We can just sign you.
Really?
But then come Monday or Tuesday next week, when the club have to lodge their list for a second time, they can then Carlton can just say Eddie Betts has now moved to the rookie list.
Yeah, so a situation
it's got to do with fair trade.
A situation of Betts or Birchall, they're committed to their clubs. No one's going to go and take them from under them.
They could.
Yeah,
they
but they won't. Like, but they won't.
We're talking about probably a 1% chance here.
Yeah, but it's a manipulation of a rule, which they'll always do, the clubs. That's what they do. Whether it's manipulating rules on the field or manipulating rules off the field, they'll do it.
Of course they will.
Which is fair enough. It's not cheating as such. But, yeah, I think the other one I wanted to talk about, Rammer, was I still can't believe, and Half and I spoke about this for quite some time yesterday.
And we blame you for this, Rammer.
That the Treloar deal between Collingwood and the Bulldogs was not locked away before the trade deadline. We're talking about not doing things by the rules. How has that been made possible?
Yeah, this is. I read this story yesterday, and I find it a little bit weird if that is the case, because I know, for example, when I did the Ben Brown trade, within that transaction, you sit in. We did it over Zoom, as everything has been done this year, and the AFL asked directly to each club if North Melbourne, for example, is paying any money to Ben Brown. Now, I don't know what happened late on trade day, because there were so many transactions that happened late. I don't know whether all that sort of stuff happened, but I did my trade on the last day at when it opened at 3:30 that day. So was able to talk, but you know, I would find it a little bit strange if it hadn't been agreed upon what Collingwood were paying the Western Bulldogs before that trade went through.
So why would that not be a condition of trade, Rama? Have you
it has
ever?
To be.
Well, but it's not. Clearly, it's not. If that hasn't been signed off on today or yesterday, whenever the story broke, if that wasn't signed off on by 7:30 or 8 o'clock, whatever the time was, Friday night, the end of the trade period, well, then that trade doesn't go through. As far as I'm concerned,
I agree.
The trade period is the trade period. All negotiations, all detail of the contract needs to have been done and sorted so that trade can go through. Otherwise, it's not a legitimate trade.
Spot on. I can't argue with that, Huff. You're absolutely spot on with what you're saying.
So have you ever come across this situation in your time in management?
Never.
Well then, because as Whitey said yesterday, he made a really good point. Other clubs could have had, we'll agree to get Adam Treloar or Josh Dunkley or Nick Dacos or whoever it might be. It doesn't really matter. Pick a name. Yeah, we'll take them and we'll sort the details out after. Don't worry about it. We'll sort it out after. That's not how it works.
No, that's not how it works, and that's not how it's designed to work. The player should know exactly the club that he's going to, who's paying what when, and then going from there. Now, Adam's obviously a bit of a different situation because he's still got a 5-year contract sitting there. So which is very, very rare. Like, I can't remember the last time that a player with that long left on a contract was traded to another club. But all the more reason, like you said, Harv, to have that absolutely to the letter of what or to the dollar of who's paying what.
I just can't believe the trade went through. If what we're hearing is right, I cannot believe the trade went through. Because it actually shouldn't be allowed to go through.
I'm with you.
I would find it staggering if it wasn't agreed upon before the trade.
But there also shouldn't be any confusion or ambiguity about it at all either. No. Because one of the key planks to Adam Treloar leaving the football club was that he was on too much money for Collingwood to keep all the other players it wanted to keep in a COVID environment where the salary cap had come down. So that was integral to the trade going through. And from if you're another club that was looking at potentially strengthening their midfield, one of the reasons why Treloar was not a realistic option was because he was too much money, cost too much money.
Yep.
So they were just like, we're not going to bother. But if there's a scenario here where there's now some confusion over who was paying what, well, other clubs are entitled to go. I mean, if you're Hawthorn thinking, geez, you know, if we had a bit more time, we could have potentially looked at that, but we just thought calling on the Bulldogs, that's done, you know, it's all sorted. I don't know. I think it's shocking. If it's what we understand it to be. The AFL needs to come out today and actually get on the front foot and say what the situation is.
Well, they should have come out yesterday.
Well, of course they should have, but they need to. They may have been shopping up for Black Friday,
which suggests
a lot of rotting going into Polo's Gil's wardrobe.
It's good.
See, that suggests to me though, Whitey, that the AFL are comfortable with the situation.
Yeah, well, clearly they are, Rammer. Otherwise, there would have been conversations and a statement or release made from the AFL. You would think.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
But that is it. I think if for the average footy fan, they're going, well, hang on a second, that's even worse that this is okay for this
that's
deal.
Right.
Like, none of this is acceptable from any level, I reckon, if you're a footy fan out there going, well, hang on a second, this is garbage.
See, we haven't heard from both clubs saying there's an issue.
That's true.
It's been reported on. Yep. It's been reported on that there is an
there
issue.
Isn't.
But it hasn't been denied.
Yes, that's correct.
Normally
that's
there's a denial correct. When those things come out.
Yeah. But I would have thought, both clubs are saying yes or no. Yeah, there is an issue, or no, there's absolutely no issue. I don't think there's any grey in this, is there?
No, exactly right. The AFL could have come out yesterday and said, no, that report's not right. It's all sorted. And they didn't. The other interesting thing, guys, is the Tasmanian situation. Now, obviously, we've got a lot of Tasmanian listeners.
Love our Tasmanian listeners.
Essentially, the task force, which has been put together, and there's some very influential people on that task force, sort of, and I think this is a great thing. They're putting pressure on the AFL and saying, are you in or are you not here? You know, we're, because it's part of this, it's not just about getting a team at any one point. It's actually the development of the brand, the development of the people, to give ourselves the best chance. And if you're not going to commit to us, that's fine. Just tell us. And we'll start to put a lot more resources and energy into another sport.
Yeah, so the feedback from Brett Godfrey, the task force chair, according to the reports this morning in the paper, if there is no committed pathway to a team, then the government probably needs to review its entire sports tourism strategy and consider if and where the AFL sits within that plan. So basically, if you're not going to give us a team, you can stick your money for the other clubs. We're out.
Which is $8 million.
Which is a lot of money.
So that goes to either Hawthorn or North Melbourne. It's about $8 million from the Tasmanian government.
Well, Jeff would be upset about that if they took the $8 million because he didn't get enough from Dan yesterday with his...
He didn't get any.
No, I know. I'm sorry. Well, any's right, but certainly not enough.
Is that your club sooking up again?
Which one?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. You're quite good at removing yourself from issues, aren't you? Yeah, well done. I like that. Good answer.
I think you'll find that in the 2021 budget, there might be some cash coming.
For who?
Yeah, I think so.
For that project.
Mm.
Yeah, I agree. Which one?
The Hawthorn one or the Tasmanian one?
For Dingley.
Yeah.
The Kennedy Community
Centre. That's not even close to being started, is it, Half? It's grass and dirt out there at the moment.
Now, without...
I don't know the latest update.
I'd like to... Try and get someone on the Tasmanian situation.
Try and get Brett Godfrey on.
Today. Yeah, that'd be a really interesting discussion. The amount of money that are given to AFL clubs to make their accommodation, their facilities, what they are we comfortable with this? Considering that there is a shortage of money in society at the moment, in community sport at the moment, because of what has happened, are we comfortable that we'll just throw $15 million here, $10 million there to make the professional athletes look fantastic, and that the others are sort of, we'll sort it out later? Do they need that sort of money?
Well, I don't know if they need that sort of money. But one of the things that, and you'd probably be better placed to talk through this rather than I would, considering your involvement day to day, is that the elements of community involvement are supposedly one of the selling points for all these facilities. Now, I don't know how much that actually is real or whether or not that's just PR and spin so you get the cash. I'm not sure. I'm sure different facilities across the nation have different levels of community engagement and access to these facilities. But that's one of the big sells. It's not so much for the team to be sexy and have cool digs. It's supposedly about community engagement and access to these facilities. Certainly these new ones anyway. Is that right, Rama?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's the legitimacy of those conversations around the community side of it and what they're actually utilised for. Now, look, let's not beat around the bush here. We know what they're used for. They're used for as an elite sporting centre for an AFL football team. We get that, Whitey. But at the same time, it's what else is stationed out of those facilities. I know Essendon, for example, at Tullamarine, they've actually got, I think, the Australian Paralympic Committee there. And they do a lot of, they do all their training there, and I know it's actually legitimate. So they use their facilities. They've got offices there. They've got all sorts of things there. So they're continuing to extend that. But the big part now of these elite facilities is unisex facilities for all. Now, to be able to provide that, if they're going to be playing games at those Essendon want to play their VFLW games out at Tullamarine, Hawthorn, I know with their new facility, they want to make sure that they're able to have those multiple teams there playing. So you're right. It's like, are they really utilizing it for community? But I think clubs are getting better and better at that now. It's not just a proposal to a government to say, "Oh, this is what we're gonna do." It's actually what happens now. So
that much.
Well, that's a good question, because I know your passion for grassroots sport, along with all of us, and we'd love to see a lot of that money go back into grassroots football.
I'm asking the question more than anything else, with perhaps a little slant towards being a bit concerned about it.
It's definitely a slant.
But we see situations where Richmond got a fair bit of money recently, the Bulldogs, Geelong. Geelong's slightly different because they are an AFL venue where, you know, all that sort of thing.
Essendon, North.
Yeah, they've all got money.
Yep.
And you think to yourself, okay, fantastic, that's great. And then you see in country Victoria, leagues merging, clubs falling over. You think, oh.
Yeah, but that's not through facilities. That's not through facilities.
No. It's through grassroots money, government money. That could potentially go to that towards that or not?
I'm not so sure about that. I think that's got, yeah, there's an element of that's got to do with population. There's an element of, that's got to do with participation in those areas now. Because there's so many other vices now and sports that kids and adults can play and utilise, the old days of, you know, the football netball club on a Saturday may be slightly a thing of the past now.
I don't disagree with that as a general rule, but I also think there needs to potentially be a little bit more investigating about that because we do get varying reports and, you know, we go to 92% of Victoria, our audience, and we get a lot of feedback. And some will say, no, it's our fault. Some will say, no, there's no one in the town anymore. Then there are others that will say, no, there's not enough support given to give it the best chance of actually succeeding. So I wouldn't do a Royal Commission as such, but I would do a really significant look at, are we doing enough in the community in sport as opposed to just continually giving more money? Like Richmond won 3 of the last 4 premierships and all of a sudden they're going to get all these new facilities. Not going to make them play any better.
I think you'll be really surprised of the grants that have been given to grassroots sporting organisations. There's been multiple. But I'll give you an example. So, obviously, I go up to Lake Ildon a lot. The Thornton Ildon Football Club, they just tried and tried and tried for years and years and years to just get above the line. You know, fundraising, all sorts of different things. This year, now I know that the year of football was gone anyway, they weren't going to field a team. They were only going to field a women's football team this year because they just couldn't get the players. They simply couldn't get the players anymore. The population that Half talks about is not there in the area anymore. They were getting all their players from Melbourne
to travel. A fee's too high. Subscriptions too high.
Yep, no, maybe. All the insurances that people pay, yeah.
Or the fight for local athletes, particularly footballers, in terms of wages and the competition for wages to get good players in different competitions around the state, go and play for more cash here rather than staying home and playing for less, like all that sort of stuff. It's competitive out there.
Or half, or go and work on the weekend and you're probably going to earn more money.
Yep.
Because if you risk injury on a weekend and you can't work on a Monday, well, you're not getting paid in your job.
You know what we should do? We should have a forum, a think tank. We'll get Martin Pakula on. We'll get some community engagement and we'll have a think tank.
Which community engagement are you going to engage?
I'm not sure. We'll work on it.
Wonder if Darren Pattinson remembers Simon Townsend's Wonder World. Former cricketing guru these days, greyhound trainer to the stars. Darren, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Good on you, buddy. Nice to have you with us. Do you remember Simon Townsend's Wonder World?
I think I do. I think so. Was he a big tall guy with glasses? Is that him?
No, that's not him. That's Tim. That's Tim Gossage.
Who's that? I know Tim Gossage, the tall guy with glasses.
No, I don't know.
Scare the kids.
I don't know who that person is, but it's not Simon Townsend. We'll work on another day. It's all right. It's all good. Hey, Melbourne, the Tab Melbourne Cup's on tonight in the Water Greyhounds, and you've had a great career through your cricketing years, of course, as a player, but in recent times your love of greyhounds has taken over, and you're involved with one of the key players tonight in the Tab Melbourne Cup. Tell us more.
Yeah, that's right. Sort of after I finished playing cricket, I wanted to get into the greyhound, so I did that and become a trainer myself. And then, been lucky enough to help out Cal Greeno on the team. And, tonight we've got Tommy Shelby in the Melbourne Cup final and also Houdini Boy in the Bowl 3. So it's a big night for the kennel tonight.
Would that be the biggest night you've had? I know, Darren, you've done it for quite a while, but to have two runners in the two main races on probably the biggest night in greyhounds for the year in a lot of ways, arguably. How proud are you of that?
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, I've been there before with a couple of other dogs that I've helped out with, but having two get through this sort of final is a massive effort, and they're two really exciting dogs as well. So we're really looking forward to tonight.
So I know you've answered this question before, but was greyhound racing in the family, or was it something that you were watching from afar and you thought, no, I wouldn't mind getting involved in that? Because often greyhound racing is in the family and is handed down from generation to generation.
Yeah, that's right. When I played cricket, I owned a few dogs, so that sort of got me involved. But early days as a young fella, and Ramo will probably know these guys as well, the Poltons are involved, and when we were playing cricket at Dufton when we were young, their dad was a trainer, so I used to go and walk a few dogs for them and go trialing, so I grew from there.
Okay.
Paddo, I was going to say to you that you're sort of telling a bit of a furphy here because at the cricket club, when you were playing cricket, I think you were very, very interested in the dogs before you retired.
Oh, well, yeah, I own them. So, and I like the pun as well. So, I've been a fan for a long time.
Hey, we could just go off the topic a little bit. What was Rama like as a cricketer?
I can't really remember Rama.
Oh, that's not a good sign.
We didn't play in the same team.
No, we didn't play, but I think I've seen him. You were a bowler, weren't you, Rama?
Geez, I hope so. After that.
That was a bit of everything, Paddo. I could do it all, mate.
Yeah. Oh, no, give us
I'm
a
sure he'd be very talented. I can't remember.
Mix the drinks.
Hey, yeah. Paddo, well, everyone's calling you Paddo. I'll jump on board. Because we're mates now. With a dog like Tommy Shelby, who's got to the Melbourne Cup final tonight, we often hear it through thoroughbred racing of how easily things can go awry through a preparation building up to a campaign for a big race like this. How often does it not happen? Do you have come up with a problem on the way through and you have to abort the mission, so to speak?
Quite often you'll get something that goes wrong, especially around big race meeting time. So, fingers crossed this has gone really good with Tommy and Houdini Boy for tonight. But, there's always something with the dogs. But, you know, this time we've been really lucky.
Well, so give us the chances of Tommy Shelby. The six box tonight, which is not exactly sort of pole position these days in the dogs. What do you think?
No, it's not the box we wanted. But, his run last week was super. He missed a start and pushed through. Hopefully he can come out better tonight and put himself in the race early. But, you know, it's such a talented field and he's going to need every bit of luck from box six.
Well, what about Houdini Boy in the Bold Truce? It's also in box six, but $1.80 favourite at the tab at this stage.
Yeah, quite short odds. He's a really exciting dog. He's my favourite at home. He's just a ripper. He's very fast. And, you know, if he jumps anywhere near the lead, he should be right in the race at the end.
And just on the world of cricket for you, obviously we're on the eve of a big international cricket season. We've got the first one day today against India at the SCG around about 2 o'clock. Are you ready for cricket? Are you ready for cricket season, or have you been too focused with the dogs?
I've been really busy with the dogs, but I'm looking forward to it. India will be a tough challenge, and obviously they've got some really talented players. It's a bit of a shame Collie will be going home early, but, their star-studded batting lineup and Bumrah's, you know, the best bowler, one of the best bowlers in the world, so it should be a great series.
So we're back at the Valley, a track we love here on the Friday form for a good day of racing. Tomorrow, 9 race card, and race number 6 is the first leg of the quaddy. Dino, 1,000-metre separate wines, Phillies and Mares benchmark 78 affair. There are 14 going around, probably a full field, I reckon, for tomorrow. And down the bottom, number 13, All Banter for the Jollies with Jamie Carr in the saddle is favourite at tab.com.au at $4.60. What can you tell us?
And it should be favourite, Daniel, and I wouldn't be surprised if it started a bit shorter than that. This is a really nice filly. They strike very well in Melbourne, the Jolly stable, and this horse on debut was beaten then at one and then ran against the older horses in the Lightning Stakes and didn't have a lot of luck that day. First up win was only in the field of four, but gee, it was sharp and just the perfect time for it to come to Melbourne, I think, and hit a race like this. Benchmark 78 level on the minimum weight with the leading rider. So I think it's certainly the one to beat. The dangers are maybe Calcani Royale, who's had a freshen up. Has a good degree of talent and ran in three pretty handy races over spring, and I think just freshened up here, looks well placed to run well. Six, Sophia's Choice. It goes the other way. It's coming up from benchmark 64 grade and might be looking for 1,200 metres, but just going to get a beautiful run just behind the speed. And one at odds worth considering might be Maria Mia, number three, who has been just in the wrong races her last two starts, but her first up win here at Moonee Valley was really good from back in the field. And if they overdo the speed up front, she's the one I'd want to be on running on late. But do you think they'll be doing well to beat the favourite? I think Allband is clearly the one to beat.
And a barrier three. Second up, Quinny, what's the money cut say for Allband?
Has been an early firm at 460 into 440. Heads the market at that quote. Kalkani Royale, a $5 second elect. Sophia's Choice on the next line of betting at six with Lady Brooke. There's been money for number 14, Paul's Regret, who's been 13 into nine. Her only win came at the Valley in December last year, but she has been very consistent in city grade since. Dino, what do you make of her first up?
Which one, Nicholas? Sorry?
Paul's Regret.
Paul's Regret's a really honest horse, and at first, she just never has much luck in her races, and first up, straight into barrier 14, she's going to need a good ride, but she's certainly got the talent to run well, and her fresh form's good, and her Valley win was at 1,200 metres, but the draw was a little bit off-putting for me, for her, because you know, it hasn't gone her way much through her career.
All right. Well, that's a bit of a summary of the first race over the 1,000 metres at the Valley. A bit of a scamper to open the quaddie. Rammer, you have one job for us around here in the Friday form. That is to give us the numbers after each leg has been assessed. What are they for the first tomorrow, please?
13, 5, 6 and 3.
13, 5, 6, 3. Now, race number 6 tomorrow at the Valley. Let's get to race number 7. The Render Delivery Race over the 2040. I'm not sure what that means. It's a sponsor of some sort, I'm sure, and we appreciate the support of the industry. But good luck to them. 2040 of the Cox Plate distance. We've got 12 going around, Dino, and Bartholomew Diaz, who we've talked about a bit through the winter months, I think, the last couple of months anyway. For the Mar and Eustace stable, Johnny Allen in the saddle is equal favourite with one more try at the tab. And so numbers 2 and 8 are both $4.80.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised by that. I think one more try should be favourite. I think she hasn't won for a while, but she's been running really well. And there's, I think, two key elements to this tomorrow. Is I think she's got the blinkers back on, which might just have her racing a bit closer and with a lot less to do. At her last two starts, she's been beaten half a length by Irish Flame at level weights. Of course, he went on to win the Ballarat Cup, and then she ran at level weights in the Group 2 Matriarch and ran fourth, beaten just under two lengths by A Fair to Remember, who maybe should have won the Ballarat Cup. So you're looking at the Ballarat Cup form into a benchmark 90. I think she's very well placed one more try. To beat number 1, Hangman, he was very good. You can tie his form straight in to one more try, because at his last start he ran second to Irish Flame at Flemington. So they both present with that Irish Flame form line. Barade, I thought number 9 did a good job to win on final day. It was a bunch finish, but did a good job, and horses that were well beaten in that race have come out and won since. So I think he's a chance. Bartholomew Diaz is there with a chance. His run in the Kyneton Cup was good. I don't think that was the strongest of Kyneton Cups, but he probably fitter. And this is the sort of race that should suit him to run well. And I think the other one worth mentioning is Lamborghini. I thought his run here two starts back was absolutely outstanding against the pattern of the night at Moonee Valley behind Groundswell. And then just didn't begin well and never really got in the contest at Sandown last start. But he's better than that. He's an old-timer. He's won 3 of 6 at the distance, and he looked to gallop pretty sharply on Tuesday at the Valley. So I'm throwing him in as a bit of a roughie for the quaddie.
Righto. All right. So good little push there for a bit of value late as well. Quinny, what's the market say?
Yeah, Lamborghini, a $51 chance or $11 the place for those wanting to cop the tip. The favourite is Bartholomew Diaz, who heads the market at 480 with one more try. Then we've got Hangman 650 with winning partner. Dino, what do we make of number 3, Dannon Roman, now trained by the Michael Hickmott stable, a beaten favourite in Adelaide last start, pretty short in the market at 750. As this is a horse you're pretty comfortable taking on due to the poor winning strike rate?
Yeah, he doesn't win out of turn. He needs everything to just go right. And when he won that provincial plate, Billy Egan just gave him the smoothest ride into the race. And I just think probably 2,000 metres seems to be maybe his upper limit as well. He ran okay at more of a last start, but yeah, I'm happy enough to take him on.
Also coming out of Adelaide form is number 5, Andrea Mantegna. My wife's named Andrea. She hates it when it's pronounced Andrea, but it is here with the horse. And the 8-year-old has found remarkable form. Another stable change, has won 2 of his last 3. Do you give him some sort of chance of being around the money again?
Look, he's been really well placed in those races, the benchmark races to win, and the roll the dice team that race him. Smart move sending him to David Jolly and going to Adelaide and rejuvenating him. He'll be full of confidence, but he did go to Adelaide for a reason, that he just wasn't quite winning here. So he'll give a sight because he'll be up on the pace, but you know, I think a place chance for him.
All right, so we've just about gone through the whole field there for race number 7, the second leg of the quaddy. Rammer, what are those numbers again, please, that Dino selected?
8, 1, 9, 2, and 7.
8, 1, 9, 2, 7. Second leg. So we're 2 legs down. We've got half the quaddy. We're feeling pretty good about ourselves, and we need the third to just go into the last with real momentum. And it is the Fiorente at Sunstud Carline Stakes, the feature event on the card over the 1,000 metres. Again, a bit of a scamper, a bit of a dash. And according to the tab, it's a very interesting market, Dino, as far as I can see, because we've got a couple of even favourites, equal favourites again. Number 2, Coruscate, and number 5, Prezzato. Both coming out of big stables, the Cummings Yard and the Elton Zara Yard. And a bit of value floating around. That Meteorite has been scratched for the McAvoys as well. So just a 10 going around in the Carline Stakes.
Yeah, and of course, this is the race that was held over from when the race meeting back in late August was called off.
Oh, yes.
The Carline Stakes and the Mackenzie Stakes weren't run, so they're run tomorrow. And I think the market's got it absolutely spot on that Coruscate and Prezzato are the two to beat. The handicapping ratings agree. They're the two highest rated horses. I love the way Prezzato's going. I thought he finished that last campaign with a really good body of work. He's trialled up well. He seems to really click for Jamie Carr because he can over race, but I think Barrier 1, and with a natural leader in Sartorial Splendor just crossing him, he'll get a beautiful run, and he's just a good 1,000-metre horse. Coruscate had his first run at 1,000 metres last start in the Doveton at Sandown, and he ran well, and he's very well placed again to be in the finish. I think they're the two main chances. I think the run-on horses here are Prophet's Thumb, gets a, you know, a dry track and 1,000 metres with good speed on will actually suit her. And 8, Human Nature, who has raced well here at the Valley and didn't have a lot of luck in the Doveton Stakes in the race that Coruscate ran in. So I think they're the four main chances, but Prezzato, I just love the way he's going. I think he's going to be very hard to beat.
All right, Prezzato's going well, says our man Dino. And I reckon at the value we get at the tab at the moment, there'll be plenty of investors taking the piece of that, Quinny.
Yeah, has been popular early doors as well, 480 into 440. Now joint favourite with Coruscate at that quote. Then we've got seemingly discreet, a $6.50 chance, Sartorial Splendor, $8.50. Dino, what did you make of number 11, seemingly discreet, a mare who has won 6 of 12?
Yeah, she has, and she did a good job to win last start. That was at Cranbourne. She won a field of 5 over Lagerfelder. It was benchmark 78, and all of a sudden she's in a set weight race here. It's probably a little chance to pinch a bit of black type for a mare, but I just thought it was a significant class rise. She's going well, and the scratching of Meteorite significant because he was the other probable leader with Sartorial Splendor, and it actually gives Luke Nolan the opportunity with Seemingly Discreet to probably lay up and sit outside the lead here now, and that probably gives her a chance of being a place chance, but I'm leaving her out as a winner.
All right, leaving her out as a winner. Rammer, numbers please. Third leg of the quaddy.
5, 2, 10, and 8.
Race number 9, over the 1,200 metres, benchmark 78 affair. We've got, what have we got going around? We've got 12 going around, Dino, because Designer Chef, number 7, has been scratched from the race. But Overkill, Mar Eustace and Ben Mellum, normally a pretty good combination, is second up this campaign and is favourite at $3.60 at the tab.
Yeah, he's a very big chance too, Daniel. He's had a jump out since then at Ararat, and he also galloped pretty well on Tuesday morning at Moonee Valley. He looks a legitimate contender. I also think an interesting runner here first start for the Hawks team is Bandersnatch. He is a good talent. He's very well placed in this grade. He's had a couple of jump outs. He looks to be going well. Gets the claim for Will Price, who's going along very nicely. And I thought he had a very good hope in the last to beat Overkill. Fair bit of speed here. It'll be interesting to see how Ben Mellon plays it. He's got Al Luca to his inside, Music Edition and Reward with Return drawn wider. He might just come out of it and get a beautiful run or try and dominate the race. It'll be very interesting to see the first 400 metres, how that plays out. Whatever it happens, I think he's a good chance Overkill, but I'm giving chances to Lita, number one, who was good winning the Grand Handicap at Flemington. He's competitive again. Five, Sondalon, scratch from last week. I think this is a good option, probably sits off the speed and will be strong late. And little chances to Montenegro Man, who was very well ridden to win last start at Moonee Valley and likes the dry ground. That's the key to him. And number 11, Compt, who was a big winner first up at Mornington and hasn't had that many runs for Amy and Ashiagi and has quickly won four races. So I think he's one with a little chance. So don't think it's a clear cut by any means. I think it's a very tough finish, actually.
All right, so a bit of value may be able to be sought in the last race. Quinny, Dano's given us a few looks there. What's the market say?
Overkill's been the best back runner at this stage. Four into 360, heads the market from Bandersnatch, who's a 440 second elite. There has been a little bit of money around for Leta at the double-figure quote, currently $11 into 10. Dino, number 13, Hussay on the third line of betting here at $7, a horse that won his first two career starts and then a beaten favourite at his previous two. What do you make of the third elect?
Fifth run, first preparation, and he's done a fantastic job, and he's a really good talent. If he was hitting this race probably at his third start, I'd have been tipping him, but he's since had that run on the wet track at Maui. Then he went up to 1,400, which he seemed to peak on his run. I just think it's hard at this stage of his preparation to be, you know, over keen on him. If you're going wider in a quaddie, you might put him in, but that's my worry that you know, maybe the peak run, you know, was maybe a couple of runs ago.
All right, so we've got a good summary there. We've got a few options to take out the last leg Ramona, which is good news because we've already got the first three according to the numbers anyway, so we've basically just guaranteed ourselves the quaddie there. What are those numbers, please, for the last leg?
2, 6, 1. 5, 8, and 11.
2, 6, 1, 5, 8, and 11. Hi, chaps. This is off the SMS. Sorry, could you please repeat the quaddie? Cheers, says Barry. So, Barry, this is for you. Rama, can you go through the numbers again, please?
Yes, I can. So, race 6, 13, 5, 6, and 3. Race 7, 8, 1, 9, 2, and 7. Race 8, 5, 2, 10, and 8. Then finally, race 9, 2, 6, 1, 5, 8, 11.
2, 6, 1, 5, 8, 11 in the last. All right, they are the numbers for the quaddie tomorrow at Moonee Valley. A chance to sharpen your pencils ahead of a great day of racing. You'll hear more about it on the form panel in the morning with Dino and the crew on RSN 927, so don't miss that. But we've got a few things left to do before we let Dino go and get ready for all that sort of stuff. And the Formula Bet is one of those. It's a world-famous Formula Bet these days. Dino, a lot of people clamouring to be a part of it. Who's our lucky contestant this week?
Well, our contestant is Angus Taylor of Grovedale. And for Angus, we're having $40 to win on race 5, number 5, Nicolini Vito. $40 to win race 6, number 13, All Banter. And $40 on the all-up of the pair, race 5, number 5, into race 6, number 13, for Angus Taylor of Grovedale.
Angus, good luck to you. 5-5 into 6-13. Quinny, what does that come to at the tab?
It's a juicy one. 370 into 440 returns 1628 pre-multiplier.
Scotty Gallen is one of our favourites on the Breakfast Club. He was in last week, all last week with Andrew Mays, just keeping the ship steady for the week. He's back again at home in the God's country down at Bowen Heads. Good morning, Scotland.
Morning, Daniel son. This is extraordinary scenes that I'm looking at on my computer.
What's extraordinary?
I think, was it Anthony Hudson, our good friend, who said, "I see it, but I don't believe it"? Or who was the famous?
I think it was Hutto.
It was Hutto. I'm looking at my screen and it says you're at a location that I don't believe is actually true. Have you got a backdrop that looks like
it's green screen?
I took a photo. I got someone to send me a photo of the back of the studio and just made it my green screen.
When you got in your car and went to Maps, because you forgot where it is.
I did. Obviously. I actually took a wrong turn this morning. I told Wally that earlier.
So, Maisie and I have inspired a revolution, the comeback to work program in the city of Melbourne.
Well, 25% we're allowed, says Dan. If you can work from home, you must work from home. So I'm just sticking by the rules. I'm a stickler for the rules. You know that, Scotland.
I know that. And it's good to see our Essendon champion is... last week he was coming in and he didn't get out of his black den. At least he got a light on today. So that's positive, Rammer. Couldn't make it again.
Just hiding, Scotty. Just hiding and keeping safe, as they say. I'm concerned. I'm concerned where Whitey has been over the last 6 months. So I think I'll let others come in close contact with him before I do.
Well, because he'd be the first to get a test. He's the sort of guy who'd be front of the queue to get multiple tests. Have things shoved up his nose. I think that's right in Adam's wheelhouse.
Have you had a test, Whitey? Have you been COVID tested?
Why would I need to have a test if I don't see anyone?
I was just asking.
No, you have had a COVID test.
Yes. I wouldn't be surprised if... Scotty, you have one?
Nah, God's country, no. We've had no Rammer? Cases ever.
No, I haven't had one. My wife's had a couple, though, so, yeah.
Oh, no worries.
I'm the only one in this quartet that's had a COVID test.
Yeah, but you weren't sick. You had to have one.
Yeah, but there's 20,000 people a day effectively getting tested. And none of us...
I'm a very healthy individual. I don't get sick.
What I do want to know, Scotty, at half, with those 20-odd thousand that get tested or on average per day, they've got some sort of symptoms, I imagine. What are their illnesses that they have? Because if they come back negative as COVID, what do they then go get some antibiotics? What's the go
I guarantee there? A lot of people that have got their test have got hay fever. Because if you get hay fever, you get a scratchy throat and whatever else. So this is hay fever season.
Peak hay fever season. You're also allowed to have the garden variety cold still. I don't think it's just disappeared, has it? It's still capable.
To a degree.
It kind of had because people weren't...
The flu numbers are down enormously.
That's right. We need that bloke on, Dr. Norman Swan.
Norman Swan.
Is Greg Swan's brother?
No, he's the guy that does the COVID people? Podcast. Oh, the ABC man. He does. He's the guru. No, get Tony Blakely on from the.
These words you're just spitting out—they make no sense to me. Who are these people you speak of?
I'm obsessed with all of this.
We've got to remember too, from Whitey's perspective. Earlier this year, he refused to get a takeaway coffee from across the road because they wouldn't let you in without a temperature test and hand sanitizer.
He said to find another place.
That's what we're dealing with, Scotland. That's what we're dealing with. Now
Daniel, something concerned me during the week.
Talk to me.
Generally, when you run an organisation, you don't really want your replacement sliding in with a bit of fanfare. And Kate Simpson suddenly appeared on the radar of the Carlton Women's Program.
Yes, assistant coach of the Stars.
I looked at the press release and couldn't find any glowing love from the coach. I'm sensing this is a forced move and you are already reading between the lines.
Well, I actually am.
Can you comment on that?
I'm in all sorts of trouble. When you've got a club legend who takes up one of the coaching jobs, it's
you
not a recipe
types,
for success.
Daniel, no. So, you don't want Scotty, them in your wheelhouse. Yes.
Scotty, what I have heard, it's actually a succession plan. Now, Kate and the Carlton Football Club are very much on board, but Daniel is rebelling heavily against it. Heavily.
He's doing a John Worsfold type situation, I think we're heading right into.
No, that's not the case. I've got somebody else earmarked for that role when I sign off, whenever that may be.
Oh, okay. Come on, give us a little exclusive here.
No, I'll let you hang on for, it's going to be 6, 7, 8, 15 years. Until I take off.
You're that confident, eh?
Until I get sacked in 3 weeks.
We can confirm you were interviewed for the North Melbourne men's job. We can confirm that now, can't we, on air?
No,
it's
we can't,
all good now?
We can't confirm that. We can't confirm that.
The mystery fourth candidate?
Was there three others? Two others, were there?
I've got a question. Oh. A serious question.
How good having Simo as part of the team, just by the way.
Oh, yeah. Come on. Let's go over that.
That's fantastic.
That's brilliant.
My question is, and I want a quick answer from the three of you. If you are a football club,
a quiz.
Are you entertaining Paddy McCartan, or are you saying, no, that sits uncomfortably with me because of his concussion history?
Scotty?
I'm playing him, definitely picking him. I back in. He's done all the medical research. If the kid says I'm okay, he's a gun talent. It's worth a risk at number 40 on my list.
Rama?
If all his medical tests and assessments and all that come back really positive, he's a number one draft pick. And he's still this side of 25. Absolutely. I'm taking him, as Scotty said, number 40 or 44, whatever, on the list. It's he was good enough to be selected number one in the draft. If he can get it all together at some stage, you've got a very good footballer there.
Half?
Pending clearance, absolutely. Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. I don't know why you wouldn't, pending clearance. Now, clearly, there's a medical concern that has to be signed off on, and that is paramount and the most important thing for him, let alone for the game and the club. And not necessarily do you let him answer that question, that you take that out of his hands. It's got to be signed off by professionals in the field, neurologists and all that sort of stuff.
So how can anyone be confident that he is okay? Because it's not like you get him and club him over the head or something like that to see whether he's got concussion or not. So how do you find out whether he is going to be okay?
Well, they have all these a range of tests available to test people's cognitive function and neurological.
So they wouldn't get like, and I'm being serious here. They wouldn't get like punching bags or stuff like that to see whether another rattle of the head is going to cause problems.
I would doubt it. I don't know, but I would doubt it. Scotty, we wouldn't be seeing any Lee Matthews type Alan Richardson pre-grand final 1990 sort of stuff.
Yes, yeah. I would think you sit down with him, obviously, and you walk through the last 3 years of his life, and clearly there was a period where he couldn't get out of bed, etc., etc. And then he needs to explain the last 12 months. His experts are clearly telling him you can do it. He's been overseas. So you document all that. Ultimately be the AFL medical department, because I think it's an insurance issue, it's a safety issue for them as much as the footy club who's taking it. So I think if he says, here's five experts around the world, I've cleared all these tests, I feel great, my life's changed from this to this, why can't I play?
See, it's an interesting conversation, because then you look at the other hand with Cade Kolodziejczyk retiring.
Well, that's why I'm asking the question, yeah.
Yeah, so, and you wonder what the medical assessment was of Kay, because he's a star player himself. He was a top five pick, I think, as well.
Top 10,
top 10 pick. And, Melbourne gave up a little bit for him. But I'd love to see Paddy play again, because he's gone through a horrible time. There's no doubt about it. You know, the stories and that. I think the photo of him sitting on the outer wing with Simon Lethlane, just watching training. It was a really sad photo of a young man that, you know, had really the football world in front of him a couple of years ago. But, you know, hopefully now that Haas, exactly right. If those medical assessments are all approved and he's going back and it's safe for him to go back, a club would be crazy not to take him. He's a number one draft pick. He was picked ahead of Christian Petrarca and others.
Okay, I got that. That's the hard one. I got two easier ones for you.
What's your take?
I would pick him up, because I don't think you have to give up much for him. But I would then go through a series of tests.
Well, when you do that beforehand,
you can't
pick him up and do it. Well, surely you do that beforehand.
No, well, you do it before as well. Absolutely, you don't just pick him up and then do the test later. I'm still a bit concerned about it. I think there's a bit of a duty of care around him as a person and not as an athlete.
No doubt. But that's why you get the medical people involved.
That's right. But I'm not sure whether, again, that's what I'm saying. How do you test that sort of thing?
But how do you, like, you could sit there and say, and because of your history and we're not quite sure what's going to happen in the future, the AFL will say, we're not going to license you to play. We're not going to give you the registration to play. Because something might happen.
Yeah.
But you can also flip that and say, well, something might not happen and I might be fine. So, I mean, once you've been cleared medically, and for the experts doing it, I don't think there's any. If he wants to, really, Kay doesn't. Like Justin Clark, we spoke to a couple of weeks ago from Brisbane. He had his troubles. He didn't want to play anymore and wasn't encouraged to do so. This seemingly is a different scenario with Paddy.
Yeah. Look, I mean,
the interesting part there, what you're saying, Half, is they might not insure Paddy to play.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, see.
And that will be a problem.
I'm not sure if you realise, Half and Rama, particularly, but I think Essendon need a forward. So, you know, Paddy McCartan might be a good option for Essendon. But as I said, I think the duty of care to the person, I think it's a bit more difficult than just say, yeah, give him another chance and see what happens. But anyway, the other ones.
Do you want Essendon to pick him up?
What's that?
Is that what you're saying?
No. I'm saying that.
Just Essendon again? Do we get the Essendon somehow again?
They need a forward.
And they haven't got one. 2 metre Peter.
Yeah. So just yes or no answers. Does Heath Shaw get another chance somewhere? Rammer?
No.
Scotty?
No.
No.
Then no? Okay. Lewis Jetta?
Yes.
How old's yes. Lewis?
Yeah, Lewis is a bit older than we think. Because he played in the 12 grand final win with Sydney, and he was already taken as an overage player. So
31.
I get look. Yeah, 31.
Yeah, I take him. Leg speed, yes.
Yep.
Please. Well, he was Gold Coast or somewhere like that.
He's on the fringes of the West Coast team, wasn't he? Through the end of back into the last season. If I'm a middle of the road or a team that's emerging, I would take him along. Yep.
Okay, and the last one, Magic Door.
Big Madge. Rammer, you can't talk here.
No, I can't.
Oh, yes, you can. Pump him up. Sell him, Rammer.
Oh, well, absolutely. Because if a club needs a key defender or a ruckman, Madge is the person. He proved that when he played as a key defender, he was elite at that. He was rated elite by Champion Data. So if a club is looking for that big key defender, intercept marker, we heard Chris Fagan talk the other day about the most important position on the field at the moment is an intercept marker, and Madjak proved that he could do that at an elite level.
I'm probably going to give him another chance. I mean, everyone's on a rookie list nowadays, so why not? Yeah. He's nearly old enough. He's 30 or something, isn't he?
Half?
I would give him a go, yeah. Yep, I'd give him a go. Again, for the opportunities that we'll face for these players, you're coughing up nothing and you're paying minimum chips. At least you know what some level of performance you're going to get from these guys. I would give him another go. You playing that game?
I would, because I think he was played out of position this year. And if you actually look back at his last good full year of football, he was shaping to be quite an important player in that key defensive post. He's quite similar, and for obvious reasons, to Alia was becoming this really quite a good key position defender. Then they tried to play him in other positions, and he wasn't the same player. And yep. I think Port Adelaide bringing him in, he'll go back and play that key defensive post where the game is ahead of him. And I reckon that's where Magic plays his best football as well. So, who knows? I just think that's what's going to play out over the next 3 days. There are going to be, and it's already been happening, obviously, but footy clubs are looking at these guys and going, because they're all tempting propositions.
Yep.
What will they do? Will they be left on the shelf or will they get picked up?
The only concern, I think, if I'm one of those players, the only concern would be if there are reductions in the list, they just might not say, oh, well, we've seen what you've got. We've been there sort of with similar players, and we'll invest in kids who haven't had the opportunity, who we see more upside than perhaps what you've got.
That sounds like a rookie list, what it was set up for, Daniel.
Well, that's true, but if you're 176 years old, you get a gig on the rookie list these days.
Does anyone explain this late rule change to me? Can someone,
another
like
conversation
Adam Remenescus?
About that after 8 o'clock, Scotty. The news is just upon us very shortly with Johnny Bowden. Off the SMS, this is the regards to the Paddy McCartan question you raised, Whitey. How do they hit him? Test him. Hit him over the back of the head? No, we don't encourage that. No. The next big hit could be a disaster. This could end very badly, says Jezza and Wang. But absolutely, but it might not be too. We would all love to see him play again, but nobody wants to see and get concussion again. See him get concussion again. Spot on. And then this one. Sometimes you need to make a decision for the benefit of another person. It shouldn't be on Pat's choice, says another SMSer. And that's what I said before to you guys, that this decision should be totally taken out of his hands.
Correct.
This is from experts, medical experts, neuropsychologists, neurologists, all that sort of stuff, who are doing the assessments. This is not a question you ask Paddy McCartan, do you want to play? Because we know the answer to that. This has got to be taken out of his hands because it's much bigger, it's much more important than just a game of footy, as we all know. That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.